We're here at Menards Bank Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned goods stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste. Cereal. Coffee. Dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Clocks Running, the podcast for everything flag football officials. I'm your host, Ant, and we are finally on Apple Podcasts for all you iPhone users. So let's get right into tonight's show. We got guests from every part of the country like usual, but man, let's start it off. Let me see here. Okay, the man that can sling the rock and throw a flag all in the same night. Lance, what's up? How you doing?
That would be kind of interesting, but yes, doing well for a Thursday. Doing well.
You don't, because normally you play Wednesday nights, right?
Tuesday
nights. You don't officiate, and like when you're not, you just hang out on the sideline.
I try and separate the two.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right, next up, we got Petty Pat bringing all the usual mess and background noise.
Hey, I made sure I turned it off. Can you hear it?
No, it's good now. All right, I just want to make sure no, like, you know, crotch rocket goes by in the background or something when somebody's saying something important.
I mean, I'm quite sure a train going to come by in the middle of the city or something. I don't know. You know me.
Yeah, all right. Let's see. Okay, and we got the only official I know that has 175 pairs of Jordans. What up, Ty?
That's not me, but I'll say hi anyway.
How many pairs of Jordans you got?
I only have maybe about 8.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
And they're only Jordan 11s. I don't buy any other Jordans really like that. I just like that one pair of shoe.
I got you. I will. This is a fun fact about me. I've never owned a pair of Jordans in my life. So I used to rock the Nike Cortez for those OGs out there, you know. But all right, and finally the Mel Kiper Jr. of flag football. Here he is. What up, Jacob?
The who?
Mel Kiper Jr.
Hey,
you don't know
who to get the hair. We're putting you.
Yeah, really.
You're gonna get the hair.
Yeah, I need to start getting it wrong a lot more often if I'm gonna be compared to him. Jimmy Clausen was not gonna be a bust, and if he was, he'd retire, and he is still working. So tell me, not being a man of your word. He's schooled up, and we ain't even started yet.
Hey, you know, I just what I thought. Okay, maybe I was wrong. How did that draft prediction go? Were you right?
Typically, I'll usually hit the right rounds for people. Figuring out teams is that's where I get messed up. I try to think, you know, when I do those mocks, I try to think what these guys will do, who they know, who they don't know, and they surprise me a lot of the time. So.
Yeah, well, I know I said it in the chat, but I'll say here on the podcast, Bex is he's done for. Tampa, he lost. He's not winning the draft tournament. Bye bye, Bex. See you later.
Oh, man, he's setting it up for everybody now, boy.
He's the most decorated Camel City draft tournament player. I can't
tell. I'm going to go sit down and have a beer and just watch at that point.
All right, cool. Let's get right into it, right into the rule book. So, Jacob, I want you to start us off with illegal equipment. Go right ahead.
So, I think the biggest thing and the biggest question, and actually, oddly enough, our man Dean, shout out to Dean down to the Cayman Islands, just shot me a message about 2 minutes ago. I'm going to read it once I get through this. But just a couple quick little points. Teams got to supply their own flags. You got to bring extra flags just in case something gets damaged, ripped, or torn, or is not correct. Altered or tampered flags could result in an ejection or forfeit. Shortening, cutting, using cloth material, other abstract that's different from the traditional, to the discretion of the officials and the refs, the officials and the directors. Let's see. Flags have to be contrasting from the player's shorts or pants. If you choose to wear a hand towel, hand warmer, glove, anything on your waist, it is considered a flag and it can be treated as such. Here's the fun one. If a ball carrier starts to play wearing incomplete, improperly worn, improperly secured, or no flag at all, they may not advance the ball after taking possession of it. They'll be ruled down where they take possession. So if they catch the pass, they're down where they catch it. The exception to the rule is the quarterback. They can take the snap and advance the ball, and they or otherwise participate, and they're down by one hand touch. Yeah.
Cool. Lance, what's the craziest thing you've ever seen someone do to a flag?
Craziest thing I've ever seen him do?
Yeah, to try to alter or tamper with.
It's the split cloth ones. That's what people – there's like one – I want to say it was like 2 years ago when I first saw them, roughly, where I was like, wow, those are really thin and they kind of fly around. And it's probably in – it's the first time I ever saw splits, and then a couple people just split them in front of me. Yeah, I need two flag. You need another flag. Literally just said, all right, I got two. I was like, okay. But, I mean, we didn't have the rules for that at the time. So outside of that, nothing too weird or strange. I mean, to Jacob's point, the things on the waist, though, I'm like, why are you putting – things on your waist. Well, it's not that cold. You don't need a hand warmer. You're not that good. I get it if you put a glove, because you don't have a pocket, so it's an easier it'll stay there. But tuck the glove in your shorts. That way you can't grab at it. But why do you have a towel? You're not a pro. Who cares? If you're not throwing, the football. Why do you need a towel?
Tosh, you're a quarterback. You have anything on your waist besides your flag?
I actually have tried a hand warmer once, and it literally got pulled off the very first time. So I tried to put a flag. But in my defense, like as a quarterback, I have to keep my hands warm, and it's kind of difficult.
Right. Totally agree.
I've never used it since then. So I mean, whatever. I figured it out since then. So.
You're gonna say it.
No, I mean, like, I get why she did, but as a receiver, why do you have that? Why? As a rusher, why do you have that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I said a previous episode in Vegas, there was a receiver in Vegas had a hand warmer on. It just didn't, like, what do we do? Just stick your hands in the air if your hands are cold. Like,
almost as much sense as Pat's shirt that's two sizes too small.
Why do you get jealous because my shirts look nice?
Ain't nobody jealous.
Hey, tell them they look nice, man. I mean, I could pull it down, but guess what? They're going to come right back up. You want to know why?
I got too
guns,
small.
Baby. I got guns. Don't be a hater.
Those sleeves are just screaming, help me, help me.
Oh, so we don't?
The threads,
Hey, we Jonas. I mean, y'all know we can get this going. We get the Jonas.
I was told to get going.
Okay.
All right, Jacob. So what did good old Dean send you?
All right, so I'm about to go off camera just for a second. But Dean says, let me see. Let me pull this up. Where are we at? Hey, bud. So I have a really weird question. If a player ties his shirt up above his stomach, is it tucked in or out? So if a defender holds his shirt, is it a flag? Because they shouldn't be going that high to grab the flag. Okay. So it's – okay. I thought that would be a little – I thought there was a little bit more to that. But I think that's pretty simple. If, you know, with us talking about equipment and stuff like that and shirts being tucked in and not being tucked in and getting holding calls and stuff like that. Yeah, it's just it's a holding call.
Yeah.
If it doesn't matter, honestly, it doesn't matter if the shirt's tucked in or not. If it's undone, if you're grabbing somebody up at the chest, you're not going for the flag. You're going for that person's chest. You're not in the strike zone. Yeah.
Yeah, simple enough. Pat, you seem like somebody that would rock that crop top kind of jersey. Is that?
I love where this is going. Is he frozen? Oh, there he is.
No, he's not frozen. Like I told y'all, right on cue. Fucking body come over here playing music across the street after I did everything off. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's why I was looking across the street, like, come on, bro. Like, I mean, I had signs, but no, I don't wear no crop tops. I mean, that's only from Colorado guys wearing them crop tops, especially those Russians.
Bro, there's a lot of Carolina dudes who do it.
Well, yeah. But, Jay, I do got one funny one for you from this last weekend. I heard the dude told me, hey, this girl can't have those flags on because her shirt is red, her pants is white, and her flags is red. She can't have red flags with a red top. I said, what? He said, no, you can't. I said, what league you playing? I said, the flags, but you going to grab her tits? I mean, the flags are down here, bro. Like, don't get mad because y'all can't grab a girl flag. Her flags have nothing to do with her top. Like, shut up.
Keep playing ball. We also letting dudes play shirtless out there, too. So I saw that.
Oh, I got to say it. I just go out there and do a job, Jacob. I'm not there to enforce nothing.
Here we go.
Hey, I have no affiliation as an organizer, director. I am just an official.
Hey, Jacob, correct me if I'm wrong, but you want to show the legitimacy of a league or a tournament is see how many guys have their shirts off while they're playing. All right, cool. Well, outside of illegal equipment, I just want to bring up illegal advancement. So I'm going to hand this over to Lance. So Lance, if you could just talk to us about illegal advancement for a second.
No, so we're going to reverse this a little bit. So there's a query on...
Sorry, go ahead.
Because illegal advancement can be, you can look at it in a few ways. The scenario is you're in a no-run zone. There's a throwback. Idiot just decides to run. We all agree it's illegal. We all agree the down is consumed. There seems to be some consternation is, do we kill it or do we let them do something stupid like pitch it back to the other team? It can go both ways. I kind of just kill it because I don't feel like the guys – I'm like, all right, well, it's just going to be running forever, so I'm just going to not let him run. I'm just going to kill it and then just loss it down and just move on. 9 times out of 10, no one questions it, and they're good to go. However, it can be construed as illegal advancement. It's conceptually, it's the same thing as batting a tip ball forward. It's like advancing the ball illegally. So that's where illegal advancement could be construed.
So, I mean, don't you think that would be somewhat similar to killing the pitch that happens in Air It Out?
No, not necessarily, because it's a because they can still advance.
Go. You almost said the word that I was wanting you to say, which was it's a live ball penalty, which is the same as the legal advancement. Am I right, Jacob?
So I am very pro let the players do something stupid, because in flag football, a whole lot of stupid stuff happens all the time. I look at illegal advancement. I don't look at it so much from a tackle football standpoint, because I think with flag, we don't have to, but we have altered, changed, and adjusted things to make it work better for us. I look at illegal advancement as what it is in tackle football as far as batting the ball forward. I look at it as an illegal pitch downfield. I look at it as, you know, you're in the no-run zone and you run the ball. There's a few things that it kind of – it's not a catch-all, but it does encompass a few different things that normally I don't think it would. I do understand that, you know, there's no direct correlation in the rule book that spells it out that it should be, and probably should. There probably should. But I think that's where kind of – I guess catch-all is the better word to use for that, as far as what it encompasses.
Yeah, because, I mean, ultimately in Air It Out or Sixes where there's no run plays at all in the entire field, I mean, if anybody runs, that's a legal advancement or a legal run, you know, but you're going to let it play out. Hopefully somebody yells to the quarterback, like, you can't run, or the receiver, or whoever it is. And they slow down, but yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of with Jacob that let the players do something stupid to kind of bring some excitement to the game. Tasha, you have any thoughts on this?
I feel like I'm all for letting somebody do something stupid as well. Not gonna lie, yeah. It's just like, I mean, as much as we like to predict where the game is going, people just like to just surprise you with stupidity. So it's entertainment. Nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like it's the same as just any situation where, you know, in the last minute of the second half, and it makes perfect sense as us as officials, because we see so many more games than players play. We, you know, in a weekend time, we're doing, you know, 60 games where players maybe only play, you know, 15 or something like that. So, we see a scenario where we're like, oh, okay, the offense, all they got to do is just run the clock out and it's a piece of cake. And somehow they, you know, mess it up, they turn it over, they, you know, have two incomplete passes, whatever it is. And the other team now has all the time in the world. They've got their two timeouts and they're able to turn it around and win that game. Pat, what are your thoughts?
That normally happens all the time. As far as when it comes, especially to seal the game, like, bro, y'all really about to go out here and throw the ball? I mean, I don't get that part. I mean, you know, I'm about to speak from a contact point, and Jacob probably going to get his ears wrong this weekend from when we get in a no-run zone, and you're going to see somebody throw the ball to the lineman behind the line of scrimmage. And I'm going to just drop the flag, and they're going to wonder what the hell is going on. I'm like, you know, hey, illegal advancement. I mean, hey, no running. I mean, you got to throw the ball past the line of scrimmage. But, again, you don't have guys or women that watch the podcast all the time when we talk about these rules. So, I mean, what can we do besides show up at the field and these guys learn the rules? But everybody knows all the rules. Even though Jacob posted in a group today, well, Krista posted in a group today, and I guarantee nobody read over no contact rules.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people are reading so much on social media to try to go through the rules. So, you know, I think that's we've talked about it time and time again, the amount of times we run into situations. They want a director over. They want to protest the call and all this stuff. And simply, they have not read the rules. I mean, I've had situations in league play where I throw a penalty for a flag guard, and immediately the receiver like jumps up and is yelling at me and this and that. And all of a sudden, the immediate question comes out of him: well, what's a flag guard? Why are you even throwing that penalty? Okay, so if you don't know what a flag guard is, then this conversation's over. Like that's that, you know. So anyway, Jacob, I appreciate you going over the rules. So I want to get into kind of the meat of the episode tonight and just talk about the center position. So, Pat, I'm going to let you lead us off just talking about the center position in contact format.
Well, center can be as far as a no contact or contact. I mean, you just got to have a vision as far as to be a center. I mean, centers are normally guys or girls that either play the quarterback position or can see the field and help out the quarterback. But the biggest thing about a center in contact, you got to be an impact as far as in some kind of way. Like, you want to be able to at least be able to snap and block when needed. You want to be able to snap at a distance, because if you only can snap 5 yards, what's the use sometimes? You want to be versatile, you know. So it's just like working at a craft, working on your craft, because when you come across, like, say, the one of the guys that you say is washed up, he only take the snap from 5 yards because he like his center to be able to block and, you know, release. But then you have someone like Garrett, he's back 12 yards. And, you know, but that takes – as far as with a center, you want to be, I would say, versatile and dynamic at that position. You want to be able to know where the gaps are at. And I give what TJ a lot of credit. He's great at that, you know, as far as blocking, snapping and blocking the ball, but finding that crevice.
TJ Simmons.
Yeah, and he gets that nice spot, sweet spot, and catch the ball and go down the field wide open because he's on the opposite side of the field. But you have to have that IQ too. Not everybody, I can say, anybody can snap a football, but not everybody can play center.
Yeah, and outside of the 25 people that live in North Carolina, are there any centers that you – you are there any centers – nationally in the contact formats that you think do a really good job at the position?
You say that will get what at the position?
No, that are really good, that have it dialed in, you know, on a national level.
Carolinas, who would you consider a good contact center? Give me five. Three.
Me, and me. No,
you're not outside of Carolina.
No, I'm out of it now. But you have Ariel. Well, Ariel, because I always call him Ariel because I'd be thinking of the Little Mermaid. Ariel. North Carolina. oh, we talk about outside of North Carolina.
Oh, my gosh.
I had a rough day. Sorry. But no, I'm giving it to
I'm buttoning that shirt, bro. It's too tight. You got to get
an eye. No, I'm hot, and y'all talking about I can't turn on my fan because y'all can't hear noise in the back. That's why if we go into centers that's out of state, I'm going with Benny from DC. Yep. He's the GOAT, that straight up. I mean, that's mm-hmm. who I learned to play the game from. As far as I'm gonna give it to Q with New Dynasty. All Diddy. Center that's versatile out of state. Those two. Oh, and the young kid from Savages, from what's the name? South Philly Savages. He's versatile too. That kid was able to snap the football 12 yards. He was able to snap 5 yards, and he was able to block and catch some critical passes. But those are the three that I would say from out of state.
All right, now let me flip this around now, Pat. As far as an official. In contact formats, what are you looking at with the center, not just in the snap, but as the play develops?
I mean, the first thing I'm watching from the center, like I told you, that once that center gets his head up and I'm watching as far as in non-contact, I'm making sure if the rusher is coming down the middle, the center just stands ground because the center can go straight up. But if the rusher coming from an angle, making sure the center don't cross the rusher's angle his angle. But then as far as in contact, my only thing I'm watching is that center is safe. Once he gets he or she gets her head up, hands as far as in the right area, as far as in the chest, that box area. And that's pretty much it, man. There ain't too much in contact you really gonna watch for a center besides of a center getting ready to release, and you watch the defender grab the center so they can't release. I mean, that's the three things that normally happen. Either line up over the center head, not letting him get his head up, or grabbing the center so they can't release. That's the only two things that you're really watching for the contact.
Cool. So, Tasha, as a quarterback, what are you looking at in a center? What do you want your center to have?
Can you repeat that? I think my Wi-Fi froze.
Yeah, just as a quarterback, what do you expect in your center?
Snapping distance, depending on the format, and then IQ is a big thing. Like Pat was saying, a lot of the times in local leagues, I'll play with centers, and I'll have to be like, "Look, the rusher's coming from your right side or the left side." I want to be able to have somebody that's able to read the field like I'm reading the field, so they know where not to go. Especially if I'm like in a hurry up offense, I don't have time to be giving you, you know, whatever. Just you should be able to know where the holes are on the field the same way I do. And then in sevens specifically, I know that's not really a popular format anymore, but being able to block or just know how to release quickly, just because the rush is coming from closer distance. And if your blocker doesn't block for you, then that's pretty much your go-to person. They have to be able to have the same level of IQ as a quarterback, I feel like.
Gotcha. Lance, how about you now that you're a top tier Elite 11 quarterback in the nation? What do you expect out of your center?
First of all, that's not true. I mean, I still play center in draft ball. So it's more about like to Tasha's point. It's like, okay, so in fives non-contact, if you can't get a good snap with some like velocity behind it, your quarterback's dead meat. Like if they throw that snap straight up in the air and you're like waiting for it, you're like, okay, well, I'm dead. There's nothing I can do. So velocity on the snap is huge. Some other IQ is huge. Ways to avoid the rush. You know, if you know they're coming from the right, why are you going to the right? What's the point? There's no point. And you know, to Tasha's point, it's about being on the same page. You know, nuances like, hey, can you side snap? Like to help benefit, like change up the play. Like if they know, if you've got three QBs, can you side snap deep? To the deep left corner, right? Some people can. So I can sort of do that, but there's a couple guys that out here can give side snap 20 yards deep. I'm like, okay, well, the field's only 25, so it doesn't do us any good. But the ideas are there. And then as a QB, it's like, look at me before you snap, so you know where you're snapping it to. Good example, Tuesday night? We were going in, it was 3 feet over my head. I just looked at it as it's going over my head. I'm like, there's nothing I can do. I can't. You know the feeling, Tasha. You're like,
yeah.
You're like, yeah, no, not getting that. So it's just, it's a tough position. It's probably one of those where you don't have a good center. You have to make it up somehow. And, you know, it's really tough. And I've seen guys that can snap it 15, 20 yards on a dart, and I'm like, well, that just saved – that helps the QB with time because you don't have to wait for the ball. So little things like that.
Hey, I can tell you why your center snapped the ball over your head. He was either scared of the rush or he was tired as hell. Those are the only two reasons.
Well, they're playing non-contact, so I don't think the
this
rush
is not contact. Is a not contact. So
Didn't I give you two reasons? So you take one away, right? And that means you were tired as hell.
Hey,
smarty
hey,
pants.
Right, on the cigar some more, pal.
So,
Pause.
So Lance, I know that you like to let the players play, as you said before. But as an official on the line of scrimmage, how much movement do you let a center have with the football? Do you let them continue to shift it around? Once they pick it up, can they drop it on the ground? What's your philosophy on that?
Well, so because we do not place the ball, we don't place the ball on the line of scrimmage. So it's up to the center to actually, turn left or right to where we're standing. So that's why we give them the benefit of that to move. And because we do not have a rule that stipulates the ball needs to be in the middle of the field, they can pick the ball up, move to the left or the far right. What we're looking for is simulation, where ball set, they have the hand on the ball, and they make a movement that acts like a snap motion. If they have the ball in their hand about to snap, but they pick up and move three steps to the right, that's not simulating a snap. So obviously in tackle, you can't do that because we place the ball. But in flag, okay, you're not simulating a snap, that's fine. In international ball, because we place the ball down, you cannot do that. It's in the middle of the field, you're on the hash, that's it. So it's very similar to – so international ball and tackle are very similar in that regard.
Okay, fair enough. All right, now I'm going to put you on the spot, Lance. Out of the Bay Area, who's the best center out there?
Jeez. Kind of depends on what you want the center to do. You want a center to be your star? Like Law. Actually, Law's actually pretty good of snapping it and then rolling back. If you want someone that actually goes and gets it, where he's probably one of your better receivers. I like seeing folks like a Brandon Chow, where he snaps it and he's gone. And he makes an option route on a corner route. And as a safety, you're like, I'm toast because he's up on you. So those are the kind of those. So it really depends on the type of center you want and what they want to do. We don't want them, what you want from them to do. Kind of like Tasha, it's the IQ part. Like, hey, if I want to start coming from the middle and then he picks left or right, I need someone that can actually do that and actually understands QB concepts versus someone, you can run a route. Great. Here, run a post corner, but you make that option. And the safety in the middle is dead to rights because he's flat-footed and he's got to wait for the move to be made. And that's what I see, like, a lot of the Florida guys, when they run that middle route, I'm like, you're dead meat. There's no way you could stop that.
Gotcha. And since nationally nobody cares about the Bay Area, who, in your eyes, are the top three centers nationally?
I don't know by names. I mean, it's whoever I see. It's a lot of the Florida guys. That's all I say. I mean, okay. Coming from a non-contact, because I see very simply, Rel take it under center. It's a corner out and he's rolling to the right. That's a corner right. Like if felt snapping it, there's no way you're catching that. And I'm like, okay, well, he just needs to catch it and it's a touchdown. So.
Gotcha. All right, Jacob, on to you. Here's the hot seat. What are you looking for in a center? Contact and non-contact both. What makes a good center?
It's consistency. Might get you the ball. Cause I mean, it's echoing what the other three said. It's consistency. It's finding the spaces, not having to be coached up every play, knowing where you're going to be, being on the same page with your quarterback. When I was playing the team I had together, the guys joked my center was the primary target, whether it be, a 5 yard out or whether it be, 20 yards down the field. That was the most dependable person in my mind. And that person got the ball the most. You're looking for consistency. That's the biggest thing. If you got people who can't get you the ball consistently, like Lance said, someone who doesn't have the velocity in the snap, that's a problem. Because by the time the ball gets to you, whether it's contact or non-contact, you have a rusher in your face and you don't have time to react or make a decision. So.
Yeah, no, I think those are all good points. A lot of everyone kind of on the same page. It's funny because there was a good period of time where I played center. I want to tell you guys, honestly, I had no football IQ. I was not a double quarterback for any reason at all. There's a reason I played soccer most of my life. I could not throw a football, baseball, softball, any sport. My arm strength is not there. I was told that I looked like some sort of like baby zebra or giraffe when I was like, down, ready to snap it. There was just no form to me.
You're already ready to be an official. You're a baby zebra. You know?
So, it was definitely a challenge for me. I think there were times when I was playing and I was putting a team together. Sometimes you just have to have a player that can snap the ball. And like, if there's nothing else that gets done, it's just snapping the ball right. So if there's one thing I was able to do, it was that. Contact got pretty rough for me. I think initially when I played eights, both sides of the line were still really big guys. So I had the ability to snap the ball and still be able to get up and set a block. But I think in contact, especially with fives, there's been this shift where the D linemen have become speed rushers, and there's so much happening on the line, and sometimes they're sending more guys, and there's a safety blitz and all this stuff going on. And I just started to understand at my age of 35 plus that I did not have the speed to be able to snap that ball and get up before one of those D linemen were already past me and I couldn't stop them. So I also, if I had to release and I would go out for a catch, it was pretty meaningless. My flag would get pulled right away. I had no dip. I had no juke. I had no spin. There was none of that going on. So I got a lot of respect for the centers out there. Jacob, I'm going to put you on the spot as well. Let's talk contact and let's talk women's contact. Who do you think are the top three centers?
Oh gosh, see, I'm with Lance. I don't know names. Like that's
all right. Think about team. Think about team.
Okay, Jackie obviously with mixed breeds. I think she's right now one of the most versatile. But I also think what's to be considered. You have two different types of centers, right? You have some that in contact, at least. You have some that are great at snapping, releasing, and being a receiver. You have some that can snap and be a blocker. And I think the women's game is starting to figure out how to have that dynamic of having somebody be both. The men's game has figured it out. There's just a lack of. I think that's the difference. Jack's we're good. We'll give a shout out to Krista. Krista Weaver can snap the crap out of the ball. My partner. She's a good center. I don't know, man. I don't know names. That's my problem.
All right. So, Tasha, I got to ask this. Why, like, when are you going to start playing contact? Because I think as a quarterback, I think you can get out there and swing it.
Pause. You find me a team with good blockers, I'm all for it.
Okay. I mean, they're out there.
Mixed breeds.
Yeah. For sure. Okay. Tasha, what, as far as non-contact goes in the women's game, who do you look at if you're thinking about, most dynamic center, best center? Who do you feel like takes that?
Well, I feel like one of the obvious ones is Venom. They have a pretty versatile center. They played together for a long time, so her IQ has to match what the quarterback's IQ is. I don't know her name, but she's a center for what used to be QC Elite. I can't think of her name, though.
Talk about Jan.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. She can snap the ball really well. Um, And then a lot of the girls that are coming up from the college scene, they come out there and play like fives on contact. All those girls can snap really well. And they're used to a more structured environment, so I wouldn't necessarily like their IQ is up there just yet. But yeah, those are the two off the top of my head that I can think of.
All right, so you know, since this isn't a podcast for officials, I want to get back into the rules and just kind of breaking down some of the things as far as the center goes. I know we talked about contact with getting the head up, and that's really what's important. Lance touched on just you know, what it looks like, the difference between flag football and tackle, with being able to pick the ball up after you've set it and all of that. I really want to talk about just kind of the center in non-contact and the bunch formation, impeding illegal contact. So Jacob, can you just kind of talk about what happens with the center and how they need to avoid an impeding, how they could bring on an illegal contact, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think it's similar to what Lance talked about, you know, where you see the rusher line up, they obviously have the clear designated lane to the line of scrimmage. So, in short, just avoid that line. You know, if a rusher's on the right, go left or go, you know, up the middle. Don't run that line and run the risk of a faster rusher than you can be to get the ball snap up into your route and moving to where you cross that path and do alter the rusher's course. That's the biggest thing.
So what happens when the center is meant to be the drop back, the star option, and as they're moving back, that's where the rush is coming from, and the center makes contact with the rusher in the backfield? What call is being made in that situation?
You got illegal contact.
On the offense?
Yeah.
Okay, now, and is there, but essentially, if it's on the line of scrimmage or past the line of scrimmage, it could still be impeding with or without contact?
If there's contact, you're going to call illegal contact. If there's no contact made at the line of scrimmage or beyond, then that's where you're going to call impeding.
Gotcha. Okay, so no, like, illegal block is happening at all in that situation, right?
That's where you're getting into if you have the contact call, contact or impeding, that's what you're looking for.
Okay, cool.
Take the kiss method. Keep it simple.
Gotcha. Lance, anything you want to add about the just the importance of the center avoiding the impeding?
As the center, especially in a two-man crew, because our angles are a little bit bad. We just don't have good angles. If you're playing center and first couple of plays you see the rusher head up, let us know, because we don't have a good angle to see that. So sometimes we can't see if they're straight heads up. So like I've told centers, or they centers have come to me and says, "Hey, he's like straight up head up." I'm like, "Well, you can tell me, and I can tell him to move. I can't see that from the sideline." So. They're get, you know, centers, when they do ask that, or they do say, "Hey, rusher's heads up," I'm like, "Center, you can't do that, left or right," and then the problem solved. So, you know, help us help you a little bit when it comes to little things like that.
Okay, so you're telling me that the rusher cannot line up in front of the center at all? That's illegal?
They cannot line up heads up over the center. They should not be lined up heads up over the center.
So if they don't do anything at all, what penalty is that? If they line up right in front of the center and do not move, what penalty is that?
If they line up over the center and they don't move, there's no penalty. Yeah. They haven't done anything yet.
Okay, so they can line up in front of the center. That's my question.
But they have to be 2 yards off the line of scrimmage too, though.
Wow, you are just nitpicking.
Well, 1 yard, right? Correct. One or two? Is it supposed to be 1 yard? Yeah, 1 yard. Because they're gonna be lined up. Over
they should
the
be
1 yard.
They should not. They should. Yeah.
Jacob,
the rusher.
What? What do you want me to say?
Okay, so this, I just feel like this is something that gets said by players a lot in a situation where there's a bunch formation and the quarterback yells and says, oh, the rusher can't be in the middle. The rusher can't be in the middle. Well, technically, the rusher can be in the middle.
That's not what you asked. That is not the question you asked.
Okay, so let's break this down.
That's a completely different comment.
Yes, let's be careful. Let's start with where we did. They're in the spread. The rusher lines up over the center. The rusher cannot have a clear line to the – they don't get the right of way if they line up. Technically, it's not written that there's a penalty. However, because I mean I'm looking at it right here.
I guess my point is the terminology that they can line up directly in front of the center. There's nothing that says they have to be. Okay. Yeah.
Hold on.
So we said a rusher can line. I said the rusher cannot. I can have five rushers, or I can have zero rushers. What's the definition of a rusher? Someone that crosses the line of scrimmage as a defensive player. That's the definition of a rusher.
Okay.
So I said the rusher. So be careful what you say.
So here's what we have. The blitzer rusher is allowed a direct line to the line of scrimmage as long as he or she rushes from either side of the center or outside the bunch formation. So with that, is there technically you are able? Yes, you can line up over the center. However, you don't have a straight line.
Nope.
That's what you lose. You don't have a clear line. You don't get the right of way, and if there's contact, it's probably going to be called on you.
Yep. Legal contact on
defense. You know, that's what that's saying. There's just because they line up head up over the center, or they line up. They line up inside of a bunch. Technically, it's not illegal for them to line up there. That's fine. They're dumb enough to do that. They want to wait. They want to lose their right of way. That's on them. Sucks to suck.
So, do you suggest that officials? I mean, it sounds like Lance. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know I got you fired up already. But are you suggesting?
So I can't do what I want to do.
No, it's not. We put the explicit thing on Apple. It's fine.
Are you suggesting that we should say, as preventative officiating, that we should say to a rusher, don't line up in front of the center?
Yes. If we see it.
Okay.
What?
But they can line up in front.
But you gotta you
line
gotta
up
tell them
where they want. Agreed.
Yeah, you just gotta tell
I agree.
Them.
I'm not saying
you just gotta tell. Go ahead. Again, go ahead.
You can line up anywhere you want, but as we go back to the one word that we're caveating, if they are a rusher, I don't care where the hell you line up. But if you are rushing the QB,
yeah,
you got a headache. Mike, you are nitpicking the shit out of this, and just because you moved you move across the country, doesn't give you the right to freaking talk out of your butt.
He's been eating Buckeyes all day.
I know.
Tasha, I know you got my back on this. Help me out.
Listen, you just hit him with a simple wait or go around, because if you're right on top of them, you're going to have to wait till they move, or you're going to go around them.
Okay. All right. So I don't know. It's one of those things that kind of drives me crazy a little bit, that players just make up their own rules. And so, I know I like to give Bay Area players a hard time. Law will do this to kind of get in defensive players' heads a little bit, bunch formation, and he will say, oh, the rusher can't be there. The rusher can't be there, to try to get an inexperienced official to then be like, oh yeah, I guess Law's right. Rush, you got to move over. You can't be right there. And I just, that terminology just feels like a slippery slope, where we're telling a player that they can't be somewhere. where they actually can be.
Well, and how about this? You make the clip and share this part since everybody watch your clips on your stories and they can know the rule going forward. Plain and simple. So Law can't get away with it no more. How about we do that? You know, instead of they don't read the rule book, but they know all the rules. But they know some of it. But how about you just explain the direct rule, Jacob read it, and then you gave them Lance the goddamn swirly. And, you know what I'm saying? And now, you know, we got the rules back right. So now everybody know the rule. So if I understand it, Tasha understand it, Jacob understand it, you understand it as clear as possible. Just make a clip from it. You won't have two heads in the video this time because nobody got pictures in the back.
But just, Jesus Christ.
Hey, we got three heads. Four, actually. But what I'm getting at is, no, seriously, just make a clip of what we just explained for these players to understand the rule of the rusher and what they could be lined up at, plain and simple.
Yeah.
And gotcha. they said they watched the clip. Guess what? You go to their name and see if they watched the clip. Oh, we can. If they don't, so no. We don't. We do everything. They're adults. We don't read every damn rule to everybody on the field.
Yeah. Jacob, with any more thoughts you want to share on all of that?
I'm good.
I will say this. I think in the IFAC rulebook, I appreciate the way that they really define right of way and right of place. I love that.
Yeah, I think that's their biggest thing. I mean, and Lance, I mean, all of us can have officiated at some point. Can agree, like that's the hottest ticket for them, one of the hottest tickets. So they have to spell it out as clearly as they do.
Yeah, and I mean they take it even further where the rusher, well, it, and Lance, right? The rusher is called a blitzer in IFAB, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and they have to declare themselves. Now it's can it only be two that are declared at the snap, or no more than two?
No more than two.
So, yeah. So there's like even more levels to it. And then also, if the blitzer moves, that's an offside penalty, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. So. Offside. Yeah. So they definitely have that clarification of right of way and right of place. The center does have that right of place. My understanding is they have the right of place until they make any step forward or to the side. Is that right, Lance?
Yes.
So I do kind of, just when I am trying to talk to players and kind of explain things, I do kind of lean on those explanations about right of way and right of place, because I think it does, I don't know, I just think it helps explain it. Tasha, do you appreciate that kind of really heavy definition that IFAB has, or do you explain it to players in a different way when you're officiating?
I'm going to be honest, 9 times out of 10, you're having to dumb down the rules for people because they're not really trying to understand what you're saying. I can read a rule straight from the rule book and they still wouldn't believe that that's the right thing. So I try to dumb it down for them, maybe giving an example. But I mean, I appreciate that rule. Does everybody else? Probably not.
Yeah. Nice. I think in general, like there is so much to that, so much to the impeding. Jacob, I think at this point I might have memorized your speech that you talk about how important the impeding the rush is, and how much of that call will come up. But I think we still continue to see, and I don't know how old this impeding the rush, you know, rule is, how long it's been around or anything like that. But what do you hear more times than not, Pat, to help me out here in non-contact, when an impeding the rush penalty is called, what is the first thing a player says?
Oh, the first thing that people say is when it comes to impeding the rusher, hey, I didn't touch him. I'm like, it don't matter if you touched them. You went across their face and you changed their lane. They were standing right there and they took off running. And I saw their body have to change and do all this to get around you. It's a Pete and Russia. You slowed them down.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't touch you.
All right.
Yeah, so I think that, I mean, just to, Tasha, to kind of reinforce your point, we really do have just that simple part of impeding is still missed by the majority of players. They still expect that impeding the rush should have some sort of contact related to it in a non-contact format. So I got to agree with you that where we do got to kind of simplify it. Jacob, you said keep it simple, stupid. I agree with that as well. I will say, and Lance, I know you brought it up before I guess I gave you a swirly. I didn't know that that's what happened, but that you brought up a two-man crew mechanic. So, Lance, I wanna lean on you in this situation and just explain to me how you try your best in the two-man mechanic to be able to see the impeding the rush.
I actually do something that probably Jacob doesn't want me to do. So I actually move on the snap. I don't do this every play. So if I know the line of scrimmage is on the five, so first down coming out, if I know the line of scrimmage is going to be on the five, I actually take on the snap, I actually take two steps forward so I can actually see the routes that they're – I'm assuming the guy's going to catch the ball. The guy or the QB, guy or girl, QB is going to catch the ball. I take two steps forward to look at the routes that are going forward, and then I'm also looking at the rusher coming down. So I actually can see the routes that are going forward, and I can see the rusher going towards the QB, and I can actually see whether or not he or she is slowing down. I kind of cheat that way because that's the only way that I can sort of see that. Other than that, I kind of make the assumption that there's no RPO, there's no drop back QB. I'm assuming he or she is making that catch as a QB, and I'm trying to hold as long as I can that first 0 to 3 yards from the line of scrimmage to say, all right, did the rusher slow down? Did they alter their path? Was there some sort of contact that was initiated by either side? Those are like the three things that I'm looking for. Again, assuming no RPO, assuming no star, because if you have an RPO, you have a star, then you got to start looking for that along with, you know, was there a handoff? Was there a throwback? Where's the throwback? Who's rushing? Where did the other, is there a second rusher that was inside the seven that's rushing the star QB, you know, illegally? So that becomes even much more difficult because now you're looking at six things versus three. So.
Jacob, you look outraged and furious that Lance does that. You are you okay with him cheating in that way?
So I think the biggest
thing. Sorry.
I think the biggest thing, number one, is experience, right? If you're an experienced official, if I know you're an experienced official, I don't give a shit what you do. You know, whatever is going to make you best and what's going to make you and put you in the best position, I'm okay with. That's why a lot of times with the more experienced officials, I don't say anything about mechanics. I don't complain about things. I talk general mechanics to officials that I don't know and what I expect from them to show me that, hey, I can do this properly, and that's a good baseline to put you in a good position to be successful. But if there's an alteration you need to make yourself to make yourself better, then do it. If I don't know you, if I'm not that comfortable with you, or if something looks off, I might say, hey, what are you doing? And give you an opportunity to explain. Just so that way we're all on the same page. But yeah, I don't care. Lance can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, and I mean, I've tried it, Lance.
Clip that. No, you clip what he just said. You clip that. You clip that.
Hey, he ain't never saying that one again. Holy oh my god! Hey, you got
hey, all right, the rest of you jokers. Lance will go everywhere with me, so Lance can do whatever he wants. Clip it again.
Hey, we go everywhere, but Lance flights are cheaper. When y'all been recently, Lance flights are a little cheaper when you have a little bit more incentives. So, Hey, you know, we can never leave you high and dry.
I'm temporarily restricted from going a lot of places, so.
No, you're good. I'm just kidding.
No, he'll be throwing nut shots. No homo. We know Jacob.
Unbutton that button so that way you don't get some sensitive. Great.
You know what? Hey, next episode, I'm wearing a tank top. I'm looking like old boy for ESPN since he think my shirt is tight. I'm going to give him a tight shirt, a white beater. That's what I'm going to wear.
Oh, God.
Yeah. No, I definitely, I've tried to, there's some things that Lance shows me or tries to get me to do that I've tried, and I don't know, Lance, your brain definitely works in a different way. You taught me a lot. I can't cheat like that. When I'm on the line of scrimmage, I gotta hold that line. It starts to mess with me if I'm moving at all. And I don't know, that's just me. Tasha, how do you try to catch impeding the rush when it's two-man mechanic?
It's hard. Honestly, it's very hard. And I don't cheat either, just because with only two people, like, I don't want to ever get caught slipping. But I also probably haven't been officiating as long as Lance to be comfortable to do that anyway. So I don't really, I don't know. I just try to do my best, I guess, is the best thing that I can say.
Yeah. So Jacob, since Lance can do whatever he wants, now I've seen some veteran officials that will have like these little flat discs, and in a two-person mechanic, they'll sit behind the quarterback, and they will they'll spot the line of scrimmage with one of those little discs, and then they'll sit behind the quarterback. Is that cool if Lance does that also?
Yeah. In two
I will never do that. Yeah. Jacob, before you even answer, I will never, ever, 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 ever do that. That is the dumbest thing I've ever seen people do. Sorry, I didn't mean to take over your answer. But if you ever catch me doing that, ask me to leave and I'll never come back.
Well, I'm not going to do that.
That's just the dumbest thing. You can't.
That must be a Bay Area thing. Colorado.
No, I've seen him in North Carolina do it.
No, Florida. Happens in Florida.
Pat, one of your former teammates who's worked for us in the past has done that.
You told one of my former teammates that worked for you in the past. Yep. And I ain't had that many former teammates. Well, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Then just do the math. Yep.
Well, all right. All right, so instead of playing the guessing game, Jacob, what's wrong with that mechanic?
Well, number one, you can't see if anybody moves on the line of scrimmage.
You can't.
Number two, you're not sure if the line of scrimmage is set up properly. Number three, there's so much that happens right there. You can't move with the play. You're playing catch up to playing catch up. There's so much that can go wrong with you being back there in a two-person mechanic. You know, again, if you cheat and you start moving that way, and maybe even if you needed to, like, trail back that way once the play starts a little bit to see, cool. But to start back there, you're missing so much.
Okay, well, I'm glad, it only took us an hour to all be on the same page, but we're here. So I appreciate that, and I think ultimately it makes such a big difference, and I can't get it out of my head. I'm sorry, Jacob, but what is Chun thinking that it is better to have a two-person mechanic over a three-person? I just can't wrap my head around that because
he said that. A while back, we did a show, and he's like, I don't understand why you need three or four refs. You can get away with just using two. And I'm like, okay.
I remember he
if it was that easy, the NFL would use two referees and save on his budget.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Go ahead, Jacob.
Here's the optics of it. when something gets missed in a three or four man mechanic, it looks a whole lot worse than if something gets missed in a two person mechanic, because a two person, everybody understands, recognizes that there are holes, there are blind spots, and things happen, right? No one's going to, and even the best of officials, I mean, there's going to be things that get missed. It's not the end of the world. In a three or four person, there should be a lot less missed, and there's things that happen, and it's an optics game.
I don't know. I don't even like that statement, Jacob, that you said everybody is understanding. Really? Players are giving us so much grace when there's only two officials on the field?
Okay, let me rephrase. Players should. I know it doesn't happen. 1,000% okay. Does not happen. But I do think that, you know, it's there's more toleration. There should be more toleration in a two-person mechanic versus a four. Because, in a four-person mechanic, everything should be covered.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, this is what's strange to think about is Lance got run over in a four-person mechanic and in a two-person mechanic. So what what about...
If he wasn't cheating, he wouldn't have this problem.
No, if I was cheating, I wouldn't have been there.
I don't know, Lance. Can we talk about just what do we do to protect you a little bit? Like, do you need like cones that are set around you? Like,
actually, you know, a bubble would be good because then all these people that want to talk to me, get them away from me. I don't need to hear anything like that. Like that.
I just think it's great in the matter of like about 10 minutes. And Lance, you were okay. So I can kind of make fun of the fact that you got ran over at East Coast Nationals, but the matter of 10 minutes, you get run over and Pat drops a wide open pass. Like you guys just give me fuel in that situation. Like,
dang, man. You get barbecue.
Jacob, we all know who Ant's working with in Nashville, right?
Yep.
Right?
Say no more.
Say no more.
I don't even
two man crew. Two man crew, and you know it. I'm not even gonna go.
I don't even own a white hat anymore, so I'll be.
Oh, you don't have to worry about that.
Like, that's not my problem.
Sucks to suck.
Oh, Pat, you have an excuse for your wide open pass that you dropped?
Well, I mean, it ain't as bad as you missing the flagpole. I mean, but when you was playing, we ain't gonna bring up old stuff, you know.
I think what happened is that his tight sleeves produced blood flow. He didn't quite extend his hands to catch the ball, you know?
I didn't have on sleeves. That's what made it even worse. It just hit me in the hand, and I dropped it.
The problem was, and it wasn't even high. It was, like, right here. It was a great ball. I turned and looked, and I'm like, turn back. Go back to my heels. I mean, it was like right here.
Hey, I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed. I was like, well, I mean, they dropped him in the NFL. Like, I can get away with one, but not like that. Jesus Christ.
Good Lord.
Hey, that catch wouldn't have won us the game anyway, so I don't care.
Yeah. Oh, no. All right, cool. Well, I think we talked plenty about the center position. I feel like I accomplished my goal tonight by pissing Lance off. And so I just want everyone to just kind of share final thoughts. Tasha, let's start with you.
I like to honestly revisit the illegal equipment and talk about all the things that players do to try to turn one over on the refs.
Okay. All right, Pat.
I'm gonna go up on what Tosh said as well with that illegal equipment. I mean, as far as when it comes down to that one flag, or some people like to put a little Vaseline on their flag, but you got sometimes where you have to check those flags as well. But But I'm just hoping that people actually watch the explanation of the impeding of Russia and where Russia can line up at. So we ain't got to explain that no more ever. So, and send it to the people that always argue the rule. How about that?
Yeah, and I mean, as far as legal equipment goes, I know that unfortunately every field, every crew is not going to be consistent. But I mean, I think the easiest thing to do, especially when we do have the opportunity to have three or four person mechanics, is to be able to have guys go over to each sideline, tell the players to line up real quick, pull your flags out, you know, I mean, do all that stuff. It's easy to kind of get everybody checked off on the sidelines, see everybody. I know it takes a little extra time. I know we're always running behind and we have so many games to do, but it does save a lot of headache, especially when it gets down to a close game or the pro games and things like that. Lance, do you think that you think it's worth doing stuff like that going forward, or what do you think?
Well, first of all, I don't know who you're talking about with fields running behind. It's not my That's the first thing. Because we go. We gotta go. I don't care if we're like 3 minutes early. We gotta go. Because by the time you line up, we're late. My perspective is, I think if we have the opportunity to do a quick check before the game, it makes it a lot easier for someone to not say something. Like, hey, that's, you can't wear that. Your elbows are not out. I'm like, okay, well, we fixed that. You know, we took care of that. So that kind of resolves a little bit of the back and forth. But unfortunately, and you know, it's, as we all know, someone is going to say something just because they want to say it. And we kind of, unfortunately, have to at least acknowledge it, but we don't have to do anything about it. But that's just going to carry on. But I do like the fact that we do, like, especially as we get closer into quarters, semis, and championship, we are more diligent because we have more refs per field versus just two. We can actually take the time to say, all right, I'll do coin toss. You guys just do a quick check, make sure everything's good. It takes a quick 30 seconds. And usually what happens is when you tell someone that, hey, you need to flip your flags because the elbow needs to be out, they're like, what are you talking about? One of their teammates is actually going to help them. That's what I've seen happen. It's like, oh, yeah, we elbows are out. It's going to be like how he has it. So 9 times out of 10, especially when you simplify the reasons why, their teammates actually help them to get it right. And, you know, if we do it in the beginning of the game, no one can really say anything about that specific piece of the equipment. So
I know my turn has came and gone, but I want to add to that. And I'm going to drop that down to maybe 7 out of 10, Lance, and go with the other 3 times out of 10 that people will then be like, oh, who said something about the flags? And then they'll be pissed off at the other coach the entire rest of the game and think it was them when it was really just you trying to do the job.
It's you. More you.
I digress.
No, just kidding.
Okay.
You know, to Pat's point, I'm like, hey, their flags are the same colors as their tops. Okay, where are you pulling the flags? Where are their flags? And, you know, people are asking us, I thought you policed the shorts and same color shorts with flags. I'm like, I don't care. That if you want me to do that for you, I can. But, I can tell the difference. But if you want me to actually have them change it out, we can do that. But the clock's rolling, as we always say. You can keep talking.
Yeah.
Clock's rolling, guys.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think we brought it up that, you know, about, you know, the arguments and, you know, we talk a lot about what's in the rule book. You know, we can argue and discuss and dive deep into what's in the rule book. Nowhere in the rule book does it say when a player starts arguing, we have to stop our clock. So if there's anything for a player to understand is that if they want to spend, if their team collectively wants to spend $400 to just whine and complain for a whole weekend, then I guess that's what they're going to do, but they will lose all that time. Now, I will say this, though, that there are veteran players that when they're trying to run the clock out, they will try to argue and get clocked, go off and get, much respect to Lance and Pat, who have invested in the box on their hip, because that makes that play clock, it's clear cut. They hit that switch and it's going, and there's nothing that's going to, the Dallas players that are whining and complaining that, want to just eat up the time, it doesn't matter, because sure enough, Lance is going to say, you got 15.
hey, you know, another thing, and I'm going to be quiet after this one. When we hit that switch, they love to ask what's the time to try and throw you off, but they don't know you have that box in your hip because they try and get extra time on the play clock. And I'd be like, 10. Then they're like, what's the time? And then they don't know the box is vibrating. And I start going 5-4. And they're like, oh, hurry up and snap the damn ball. Yeah, but they do that. They'll ask the time. What's the play clock? Time. What's the score? Pause. Shut up. Let me do this, or whatever. But now I've just got to the point where I don't say anything, bro. I just call it out and I go that route, because as soon as you start entertaining the sideline with one player, everybody want to talk to you. Everybody want to do all these things. But if you're not the captain, I'm not talking to you. So.
Yeah. Lance, just want to give you your opportunity for final thoughts. Now that you've taken over the Bay Area, you are the most dominant quarterback to ever grace the field in California. What are your final thoughts?
Let's not go there. it's kind of interesting seeing folks who are just starting out and trying to learn. Like on Tuesday nights, it's pretty much a rec league and we have a lot of net new players. And the one thing that I thoroughly am enjoying watching is their growth. So I'm watching players that have never played and started playing like 6 months ago. Now they're playing Tuesdays, they're playing Wednesdays, they're playing Saturdays, just because they're into it. So to me, that's the growth of the sport for both men and women. And that's the fun part. So that's what I'm seeing more and more, especially recently.
Awesome. So, Jacob, I'll let you go last. My final thoughts tonight, this past weekend was the annual big tournament in Colorado. It's something that I played in, five or six times, best of the best. It's an 8-man contact tournament. And it had the smallest outing they've ever had, maybe from when they first started, when, they were still wearing the football mesh, jerseys. But I just think that it is a sign of the times that eights is it's for the dinosaurs. It's not a format that needs to continue to have a focus. People can be upset at me for saying this, but look, I came from eights. I played eights. It just doesn't make sense to me anymore. It takes up field space. There's always issues. They're using triple threats. It's so hard to try to travel with an eight team. You need 30 guys and, all this stuff. So ultimately, maybe that was a tournament that during COVID, I think they had their biggest turnout and they had teams from all over the country. Main Event won the last 3 years, and this year Main Event didn't even show up to, defend their title. It was a basically in-state Colorado tournament, and that's all it came down to. Now, they did add fives to the tournament, and they had fives contact, but still there was just not a big turnout. So hopefully just, for the sake of, me being from Colorado, I hope Colorado as a state and a lot of the other smaller states that don't have such a big flag football presence, I hope they turn their attention away from these goofy formats that maybe 10, 15 years ago were huge and everybody loved, and there was all this attention to him, that they start doing, you know, what the future is, you know, and getting more into fives, getting into non-contact, you know, putting more focus on trying to put women's leagues together and putting youth leagues together. You know, I continue to say it. I love what Dula and Law are doing in the Bay, because I think that that's, you know, that's their focus. And just like Lance is saying, the growth is huge. You know, they have like three different leagues out there, and they all intermingle. They work together. There's not ego in it. You know, and I think that that's something that's a rarity in the sport. And I hope that that changes down the road. So, Jacob, your final thought.
Man, I just, you know, I'm really looking forward to this coming weekend. We've got, you know, our draft tournament this weekend, Campbell City draft tournament. We do it, you know, it's become a once a year kind of thing. You know, all sorts of different things going on. We've got, we're starting to sell flags ourselves, but we've got Carolina Drip Shop who came in with the jerseys. We got Shrooms who took care of our champion shirts and our champions flags. It's one of my favorite tournaments of the year. So I'm really excited. I hope the weather holds out. Looks like it's going to be, you know, not necessarily the hottest day now, but it's going to be, you know, a little dreary, but we're going to power through. We'll be all right. Got Pat coming. I got Jordan. I got Joe, and then I'll have Rob Baker as well. So we'll have the guys together. It'll be great. Just really looking forward to it.
Are you facilitating any sideline betting this draft tournament? Will that be happening?
I personally do not get involved in the wagers. I do know what the odds are, and I do know who the bookies are, who can get you taken care of.
So, okay, cool.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good time.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. So that being said, we are now truly everywhere. We are on so many platforms. I have found this past week that I was able to get us on all the places that podcasts are available. So wherever you listen to your podcast, it's on there. Just look up Clocks Running. We are also on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. For those dinosaurs that still play 8-man contact, we are still on Facebook. You know, so I guess find us on there if it's worth your time, or, you know, whatever. But, you know, check us out. Players, this is your opportunity to learn rules really easily. And then officials, this is how you get better. You know, this is a podcast for veteran officials, and they talk about, you know, mechanics and what works best for them. So if you're a new official, hopefully you take the opportunity to listen. I appreciate y'all being on tonight, and look forward to next week. Have a good night.